And a very good morning to everyone out there on this beautiful, crispy Saturday morning. And I don't mean crispy hot, I mean crispy cold. Welcome. I was away last week. I was actually out in California on a business and pleasure trip. San Diego for business and up the coast. So I have now dubbed California the state with traffic jams. It's the traffic jam state. Yes, amazing. And we thought we had it bad out here. Truly amazing. But it was a fun time. Did get to visit wine country. I added to my collection, okay? All right, so I just added my collection, everybody. That's all you need to know. Today we're going to have an interesting show because our guest is going to talk about change. And she's not running for public office, okay? All right. The change we're talking about is change that happens in your life. So you might be in a position where you want to change a job, or you might be in a position where someone else wants you to change a job, and that change might mean going to work for someone else, or it might mean starting your own company. There's a lot of interesting hurdles to talk about. We're going to be joined by Dr. Deborah Osgood. She's with the Knowledge Institute. She's been on before. It was a fascinating subject, so I invited her back. So if you're thinking about change or you think change might happen to you, you're going to want to call us at 645-6161. We'll be back in a few moments when we'll cover this past week's economic news and give you an update on the stock market, which is not happy that an election is coming up this coming Tuesday. Right here on Mark Ebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM.
Hi, I'm Donald Trump, and you're listening to Mark Ebert's Money Sense. And I like Mark because he just said very nice things about me.
I guess Don's going to be in the state this week, or is here. So, Jeremy, why don't you give him a buzz, and I know you know how to get a hold of him, and invite him over for dinner.
Oh, I wish. Oh, my God. And yeah. I'll get heat for saying that, but I wish I could.
Yeah. How you doing, Jeremy?
I'm very good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great.
Fantastic.
I'm doing great. I'm back.
Yeah. I missed you last week. You and Mr. Peterson.
Yeah. Oh, we were both out.
Both were best of. I'm like, well, I got nothing to do.
You were lonely.
I can sleep in. Yeah.
Yeah, you could. That's right.
No, it was fun.
So we got some interesting things going on. Jobless claims, people filing for unemployment benefits did drop by 3,000 to 258,000 in the week ending October 22nd. Four-week moving average is sitting around 253,000. Durable goods, what's going on there? Actually slipped 0.1% in September and are down 1.6% over the past year. Now, this is interesting because the Commerce Department came out and said that the gross domestic product for the third quarter was 2.9%, just before the election, as my guest said during the break. I will bet anybody that that will get revised down after the election. Very interesting. University of Michigan's Consumer Sentiment Index decreased 87.2 in October from 87.9. in September. What's going on with consumer spending? Well, spending rose 0.5% in September. Personal income increased 0.3% during September. Inflation was 0.2% in September. It's risen 1.2% over the past 12 months. So we certainly don't have inflation. That's why the Federal Reserve is sitting there going, well, we don't know what we're going to do. If they raise rates, it'll probably be in December. It's not going to be November. The Institute of Supply Management said the manufacturing index rose 51.9 in October from 51.5 in September. So let me see what else, anything noteworthy here. The Federal Reserve signaled that the time for another interest rate hike is approaching. See, I think the December thing will happen. And it doesn't need much more evidence before moving. The committee judges that the case for an increase in the federal funds rate has continued to strengthen, but decided for the time being to wait for some further evidence and probably the election to move. Unbelievable what's going on. The only person who's not waiting for the election to move is the head of the FBI. Interesting stuff going on in this world. Stock market is moving down for the most part. 2085.18 was the close yesterday, 41-point decline. That was a 1.94% decline. If this keeps up, we'll end up with a year of, no rates of returns. 504.637 was the close on the NASDAQ. That was down 143 points or 2.77% for the week. We were down 1.5 on the Dow Jones Industrial Average, under 18,000, 17,888.28. Russell 2000 was at 1163.44. That's down 2%. International stocks were down 2%. Yield on the 10-year bond dropped almost 4% at 1.78. 2.57 was the yield on the 30-year bond. That dropped almost 2%. Oil was down 12%. Oil futures at $44.33. Now, this is just on the price basis when I give you these indexes, all right? It doesn't include dividends. So gains are a little bit more because of dividends. Year to date, 2% increase on the S&P. NASDAQ's one up. Dow Jones up about 2.5. Russell 2000 up 2.5. International stocks down 2. Oil futures up 20. Those are the numbers. Be interesting to see how this year plays out, especially after the election. When we come back, Dr. Deborah Osgood is my guest. We'll be introducing her. She's all about change and helping people go through change when it comes to employment, when it comes to starting your own company. We'll be talking about that for the next couple of hours. Of course, you'll be able to call in. This is one of the only real live interactive radio programs on the weekend here. You can call us, 645-6161. I do bother to show up and sit in this seat and talk to you every Saturday for over 22 years now. I'm working on my year 23. Be back in a few moments right here on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. Here's the number, 645-6161. You're listening to Mark Hebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and on the Seacoast, 96.7 FM. I don't think she's a black magic woman, but she can make magic when it comes to helping you with your change of a job or thinking about starting your own company. Dr. Deborah Osgood is my guest this morning. She's with the Knowledge Institute. Good morning, Deb.
Good morning, Mark.
Black magic.
Yeah.
Is that what it takes to get somebody to change, a little black magic to kind of help them out when they're going through change at work and that sort of thing?
I hope not. I hope white magic. Maybe we chose that since Halloween was recently.
That's right. I think so. 645-6161 is our telephone number this morning. And are you going through change, right? You know, so have you been laid off and you're trying to figure out, what do I do now? Do I start my own company? You know, how do I go about dealing with this thing that happened to me? And you know, I've seen this happen time and time and again with clients, having practiced for 36 years, and I guess we never get it right. We're always going to practice in financial planning like a doctor does, right? And
things change.
Interestingly enough, it tends to affect men more than women, but it can be pretty devastating. So someone's worked for a company for 30 years, and all of a sudden they get laid off.
Right.
And a young person gets their job.
Right. You say it happens to men, can be more devastating. And I think that's historically that men have been the breadwinner. But emotionally, when you work for someone else and you find out that you no longer work for them,
right,
with very little notice, it is devastating emotionally.
I'm sure to both.
Yes.
Men and women. Right.
Yes.
Right.
But you're right. The recent recession they referred to as a man session, it definitely affected more men, more middle-aged men,
right,
in middle management jobs.
I heard that.
Yeah. It was referred to the man session.
Yeah.
And, right, a lot of them, emotionally, you know, men haven't been socialized to really deal with issues like this as healthy as women, because women will give each other permission to say when they feel badly. But men, they see it, well, we've pretty much programmed and socialized men to believe that you're weak for some reason.
Right.
But, you know, emotionally, you go through feeling like a failure and what am I going to do and how am I going to take care of my family? And if you don't deal with those issues head on, it can last longer in trying to overcome what you've gone through than getting over it a lot quicker.
On a financial note, if I get into a situation with a client where they're suspecting that that could happen, there's a number of financial things that I oftentimes will suggest that people do, like double your emergency reserve, for instance. Make sure
Smart.
That you have access to cash. Put a plan together that says, you know, what am I going to do? Get your resume updated. What am I going to do if that actually does happen? And then you look at all of your resources and you decide, you look at your budget, you look at ways to cut down your expenses, you look at in probably six-month increments is pretty good. So what am I going to do in the first 6 months? And if I still don't have a job, what am I going to do in the next 6 months? All right, what resources will I use? So I try to help them put at least a financial plan together.
You can add a suggestion to that. They can also start and test a job on the side. Many people have started self-employment businesses by testing out the market and the potential need for what it is they offer. And almost many industries now can do self-employment. The contingent workforce, where employers are hiring people on a project base, is across industries, healthcare industry, financial industry, where people are being hired back as independent contractors on some type of a consulting basis, IT. So almost any industry. So add to your toolkit there that they can test out on the side working for themselves.
Well, that's interesting. So do these people actually just say, here I am, I'm out for hire?
Oh, no.
So it becomes a second job?
Well, first you figure out, we actually refer to this as playing business. Like when we were kids, we played house.
Oh, really?
Yes. It puts it in the right context.
I've been playing business for 36 years.
Yes, you're and enjoying it. And yes. Ideally, that is the end goal.
That's right.
But when you think of, many people are intimidated by business. From last generation, you think starting a business is high risk. You need money. You got to get a loan. You can't get one. Well, having your own job right now is high risk and all of long hours and the same kinds of things. But starting a business and referring to it as playing business takes all that out, and it really says, who will I find that can buy what I have to offer? Sometimes it's a career change, sometimes it isn't, and it can be this independent contractor role. But they go out and they find a potential customer. If it is a consulting role, see if you can get a client where you work evenings or weekends to fulfill an IT or an advisory role. If it's a hobby that you've put off for your life and you now want to go off into some other field, you can find that also on the evenings or the weekends and try to get a customer. The whole goal is get one customer to pay for what it is you want to do.
Oh, they have to pay? Oh.
That's the key.
That's the big hurdle.
That validates it, yes.
That's the big hurdle,
isn't
it? They
got to pay.
That's right.
But in some situations, even relatives will pay.
So tell me about your clients. I don't want you to disclose personal information, but tell me about the people that will seek you out and the services that you provide to those folks.
It's across the whole parameter. I've worked with individuals at 15 years old trying to find out what they wanted to do with their life to 72-year-olds with a PhD that were in career transition. So it isn't limited to age or socioeconomic background or culture, because it starts with the individual. You know, when we work with someone and help them with self-employment, it starts with both the art of the self and the science of employment. So all of us want to be validated, and we find a lot of our personal validation in our careers, in what it is that we do, that someone in turn will validate through paying for it, or in retirement sometimes it's a volunteer activity. So there really is no limit to the types of people we work with. We also work with a lot of marginalized populations, individuals with disabilities. They're a great group for doing self-employment. It allows the flexibility depending on their issues. We've had traumatic brain injury, autism, bipolar, wheelchair bound. there are really no limitations to being validated in a way that someone will pay you for offering something.
So let's talk about the art of the self. So I come to you. I just fired myself. I'm kidding.
I bet your wife's glad you're kidding.
Yeah. No, she'd be okay with that. She's ready for me to retire.
Oh, okay.
and I did practice what I preach, so I'm in pretty good shape when it comes to that. So thank God, right?
Or thank Mark.
that's right.
A little of both.
Well, and Marie, too. It was a team, interestingly enough.
Very nice.
You know, and this team is staying together for sure. That's because I've seen too many divorces out there and how devastating they can be financially, right? You know, that's
yeah.
not the reason I'm staying together.
I didn't think so.
Yeah, no, but
family businesses, same thing, husband, wife.
Yeah, that's right. But the art of the self. So, you know, what is it that you're looking at, I guess, is the question. So,
yeah, great
you know,
question.
What are you trying to figure out about me to then frame where I need to go if I'm looking for another job or looking to start a business?
In short, how much have you been brainwashed?
Okay.
And really, it's when they sit down, any client sits in front of me and I listen to and I ask a few questions. And most of it is about what they believe they can't do. And so my role is to facilitate this kind of self-assessment of what their strengths and natural interests really are. And throughout this process, this particular process takes only 2 hours, and it's very transformative. And the client goes from being afraid or discouraged or confused to a very significant aha moment, like, that describes me, this is what I really love to do. And then I help to introduce, well, if this is your natural gifts, these are your interests, look at this opportunity, see what they're paying for this type of a skill. And it just opens eyes in a way that helps to get an individual excited and believe in themselves. And then I don't have to do the heavy lifting. My job is to just show and introduce where the appropriate resources are that can get them on their path.
So what are some of the key questions you would ask me in that interview, for example, to try to get what I'm all about?
Sure. There's two parts. Great conversational. This is a very important process of building trust, too, because I think a lot of people have every reason today not to trust many people. So where did you grow up?
Not far from here, the west side of Manchester, actually, in the flats.
That's perfect.
Where, yeah.
What did your parents do for work?
Oh, Dad was a carpenter, and Mom was a children grower.
A children grower.
A children grower. That's right.
So she managed a small business.
She did. Well, there was five children, so it was a medium-sized business.
Very
back
good.
Then.
And you can't fire your employees, so
no,
definitely did a good job.
No, but you can put them in time out.
Very good for her. So she had good HR management.
She did, yeah.
And what is your earliest memory in terms of what you heard and you saw and experienced about money?
Oh, that's interesting. My earliest memory was that there wasn't enough money. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
Yeah.
That is a very revealing answer for me.
I'm sure it is.
Yes. When I work with an individual.
Yeah.
And I've heard quite a few, and they're usually right on. So it's funny that you said a little while ago, you've got a nest egg.
Yes.
You made sure.
I made sure.
Your early, right, imprint about money.
Well, you know, I talked about that on Thursday,
you
not
did.
To talk about me.
And why you did this career for money originally.
I did it for money originally because I had a teaching degree, a music education teaching degree, and I loved music, and I like to teach. I teach now, right?
Yes.
And I've taught for 30-something years, right, my clients. And but I remember talking what had happened was, is I was making more in college, working part-time, playing out in bands, and working a couple of jobs than they wanted to pay me as a starting teacher.
Yes.
And when I went to an interview, I'd said, well, why would I want to work full-time and take a cut in pay?
Mm-hmm.
Which was, the person interviewing me didn't like that comment, but that's what it was. And I decided I wasn't going to do it for that reason.
Yeah.
So there was a fear, right? There was a fear that, and I think a lot of people, and I've seen this in a lot of clients, different fears of childhood translate throughout their life, there was a fear that I would end up poor.
Yes. And so as you mature now, what this tells me is that went into a more of a respect than a fear. You learned to utilize it in a way to make choices about your career so that you would not end up in that situation.
Right.
So I see my role, and in less than 60 seconds, I got that out of you, and you recognize how profound that early impression about money influenced your choices.
But the interesting thing that happened out of that was that that's now not the driver.
Yes, you can say that now at your age, too.
Right. That's now not the driver.
Right.
It's the respect and knowing that I've been able to help many, many people
yes.
in their financial lives. And when they come back and they thank you, that's worth more money than I have.
Yes,
right?
I share that.
So it's my work. It's interesting how it will transition if it works right. I guess, if you start that way.
And that's the key. You stayed true to your early messaging. You made appropriate choices. You've now matured in a career that's very personally and financially rewarding for you.
Right.
And I see that as my role.
Right.
And so...
And that's what... So when you work with a client, you're looking to accomplish those very same
exactly.
things. Exactly. Right.
And it's all there. It was all within you to begin with. I just need to uncover it in a way that I can facilitate and ask questions and introduce resources that are specifically appropriate to that individual. Because each individual is unique.
So what other fears are out there that are common to people when you're talking to folks? 645-6161, if you want to join in this morning, on Mark Hebert's Money Sense with Dr. Deborah Osgood from the Knowledge Institute. And she helps people with these transitions, right? You lost a job, you want a new job, you're kind of scared. This has never happened before.
Right.
Give us a call, 645-6161. So what other fears that are common out there?
Yes, under this piece of mastering the self and then mastering employment. And so money is always at the heart of a career because as long as the world works on currency, that really is the heart of our succeeding. But now to move ahead and attain the career that you truly want, there are other key areas of behavior. What did you see? What did you hear? What did you experience early on about negotiating? And for men, they're usually taught to negotiate. They have confidence. They've been socialized for decades and generations that it's okay to be aggressive and ask for what you want and ask for a raise. Women, not so much.
Right.
Not negotiate. Women are more about nurturing. I've worked with a lot of women in business, and one, when it comes to money, how much would you like to make? Well, I don't need to make so much money in my business, just enough for my family.
And oh, that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, I get very disturbed.
They're
going to
kick you off a Shark Tank if you think like that.
Yes, I say that's called a hobby. Now, let's get down to business.
Right.
You know, when you're in business, take away all this emotional belief that a lot of women have that it's bad or it's greedy to have a lot of money.
Oh, isn't that interesting?
If you have a cause and you don't need that much money, well, the more money you make, the more you can then put some of that towards a cause that you care about. So it gives you more control over bringing about the life that you want, quality of life, and the impact that you want.
Sure. Money gives you options.
It does. Freedom of choice.
Freedom of choice. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
So negotiation, relationships, these are some of the core issues. Conflict. You know, when you're interviewing for traditionally a job or even trying to close a deal in business, it's all about who gets the best of the deal. And so dealing with conflict for both men and women can be a challenging situation. So the same simple...
So what happened in the win-win conversation?
You ideally hope that's the case. But when you're interviewing for a job, for example, who says the number first about how much you're going to work for loses...
Interesting.
You know, that's a rule. So when you're negotiating or it's kind of tense about how you're trying to optimize your income and your benefits, and the employer wants to, of course, minimize what they pay you and the benefits.
Right.
So how to deal with that, how not to take it personal.
You know, it's interesting as an employer, I think about all of the people that I've interviewed to hire and, you know, throughout the years. And what you see in that very first few minutes is the best you're going to see of that person throughout their career.
That's interesting.
In a sense, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. We talked Thursday on the air, too, and one of the best questions I like to ask when I'm interviewing is, what have you learned about yourself?
Yeah.
And that question right there can be very revealing.
Yeah. I've got a couple of questions that I've asked. I says, I'm going to ask you the Burger King question. And that is, if you can have it your way, tell me what your career is going to look like in 1, 3, 5, and 10 years down the road.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah. I like that.
Yes, I call that the Burger King question. And then another question I ask when I interview, which is kind of, which is giving me some interesting things. And I usually say it in context with my business partner. I say, well, you know, you've been here. So we hire you and you're here and you've been here 6 months, a year. And we're gonna do a review, right, of how you're doing. And I'm going to say, boy, you know, he or she has done a really good job. And what are those things that I'm going to be talking about? And they get to speak about that. And what I'll usually learn is really what they really think they're really good at and how they can really.
Oh, right? Excellent. So you invite them.
I invite them.
Yes.
The next question I give, I say, that's very true, but there's a couple of places you could improve upon. What are those two places and two things?
Oh, I like this a lot.
Yeah. Well, I've got it. And sometimes I can't think of anything.
Yeah.
I'm perfect.
I used to have 75 employees in a manufacturing company, and I always hated the review process.
Yeah, I know. It's not fun.
No, it isn't. So, boy, I could have learned those questions a long time ago.
So on that note, not being perfect, we're going to take a break so we can work on our perfection. 645-6161 is our telephone number. Dr. Deborah Osgood's my guest this morning. We're having a good conversation, but you can join in. Hey, you got a question for Dr. Osgood about change, changing a job, starting your own business? Maybe you've got some experience that you'd like to share with us that can help our other listeners. Just give us a call, 645-6161 this morning on Mark Hebert's Money Sense, right here on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM. Yeah, he's excited that Deborah Osgood is here this morning from the Knowledge Institute. I'm sure you are as well, and you can show your excitement by giving us a call at 645-6161. We'd love to hear from you. I know someone listening out there has been fired. I know it's happened. I know you've had to deal with it. You might still be dealing with it. Let's talk about it. Let's talk about the things that you can do to get your life back on track. Maybe you want to start your own company. Maybe you want to play business, like Deborah said in a few minutes ago when we were talking about. I like that term, playing business, right? You know, it's like I guess that makes a lot of sense. It's not something that I think you would have been able to do 30 years ago.
That's exactly correct.
And yeah, when you said that, I said that's because of technology.
Yes, and the reach of the internet, and being able to reach a prospective market. Getting someone to buy what you have to sell, and plus outsourcing. You don't have to be the marketing person. A lot of people make brilliant, beautiful crafts and high quality. And companies like NewHampshireMade.com, NH Made, it's in New Hampshire, and they have others in other states, will take, for a membership fee, you can put your products in their hands, and they'll market it on the web. They marketed it all to rest stops in brochures in the state, and they're always promoting. So they'll become your marketing channel, and you can focus on producing what it is that you're good at.
Right, right.
Amazon does that on a global scale. They have order fulfillment services. You just make your product, you just put it up on their website, and there's your marketing, there's your sales, and there's your record keeping for distribution.
Right. So I guess what I'm getting out of the beginning of this conversation, that is, if someone is in that position, right, where this change is happening to them, it's out of their control, right? You work for someone else. I said on Thursday, I didn't want to work for someone else.
Mm-hmm.
When I went into business, most of the people that I trusted told me it wasn't a good thing to do. You shouldn't do this.
Hmm.
It's risky.
Yes.
It's not going to work. You know,
that's
most people
common.
Will start businesses, fail. And my thinking from day one was, I don't want to be in a position where someone else controls my fate.
Yes, right. It takes desire. That's another thing I explain is, in order to succeed at almost anything, you have to want to succeed. Then there needs to be a fit between your skills and what it is that you want to do, or your capacity to learn whatever it is.
So it's know thyself.
Yes.
Right?
Well, the want, that's where the know thyself comes in. Do you really want to succeed? And some people will talk about it, but that's just what they'll do.
Not everyone wants to succeed.
No. The difference between those that succeed and those that don't is one simple thing. It's those that do and those that talk about it. You know, there are a lot more people out there that are always better at something than someone else. Like, there are better people out there than me. But are they out there doing it, or are they out there talking about it? That's the difference. When you succeed at anything, you have to get up, you have to overcome obstacles, and you have to want to succeed to go through that process.
Right. What's that saying? People that do, people that don't consult? 645 on that note, 645-6161. You can go on air and talk to us directly. Another way of getting your information to us is Jeremy, our producer, will take it and relay it to us if you'd like. But we'd love to hear from you. I want to hear from some people who have dealt with some change in their life, or maybe you're in the middle of it and you want to talk through some things. Dr. Deborah Osgood, I know in the last time you were on, you had some very good practical suggestions for people that were good takeaways from the show, and you could just go, yeah, I'm going to try that, I'm going to do that. And that's what this is all about, is trying to help people make those changes in life. And like I said earlier, I deal with it. I've had a lot of clients in that situation, and I can deal with it more from a financial perspective. I'm not trained to deal with it from a psychological perspective like you are, although I got to tell you, there's a thin line when you're a certified financial planner, right?
Very.
Very thin line in between being a financial planner and being a psychologist, interestingly enough. Sometimes I do cross the line, but you know why I cross the line now? Because I got 60 years under my belt.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I crossed the line now.
And you mentioned when we had a show together before, you have a questionnaire. So you also invite people to share with you what's important to them in
right.
a way that translates into how you can help them with their financial profile.
Sure.
It's all about quality of life. I mean, money for money's sake is just money. So you actually do understand your clients in a way that you can help to bring about what it is they want to achieve.
Right. Well, the psychology of money is quite interesting to me, because sometimes, you know, what you have is never enough.
Mm-hmm.
Right. You know, and it's just it's interesting to see how people deal with money. And money is fascinating in a relationship, because sometimes money becomes control. Right.
Yes.
You know, and I don't know how much of that, you delve into.
We do. Yeah. We talk about the psychology of money.
Yeah.
And you're right. People assign value to money. Is it power? Is it success? Is it security? And understanding how they look at it really influences, again, what they decide to do. So for your caller's perspective, I mean, even, you know, calling if they've lost a job, but also calling if they think they might at some point want to start their own business, even on the side, just to ask questions about where they can begin, because it really is a possibility for anyone. It just starts with this want, this fit, and this focus.
So want, fit, and focus.
Yes.
Yeah. So the want is deep down, I really want to do this. I want to make a change, right?
Yes.
So the fit is... Talk about the fit part a little bit.
What are your interests? What are your strengths? What do you want to sell? Are you suited to it? For example, for someone who's maybe 60 or 50s and wants to start a second career as an opera singer, that might not be the right time.
Right.
But if you have always loved opera, working within an opera institution might be the way to go. So fit is, what is your real capacity to fulfill what it is you're looking for? And then we can refine that to make sure that you can achieve it in some degree. But if you physically or for some other reason can't actually do it, then there isn't a good fit.
Yeah.
The focus part comes to that science of employment. If you're going for traditional employment, there's a path for that. It's last century, it was the resume and a little bit about who you know. Today, it's a lot about who you know. And it's about networking, and presenting yourself in a creative way where you stand out more than keywords on some automated resume screener. for the science of starting your own business. It's about making more money than you spend. And no customers, no business. That's essentially the two important ingredients.
645-6161, join us this morning. The who you know part is interesting. The other one is standing out, you know, making yourself look outside of the group, right, of the herd. And I was, I did see Andy Hirschberg yesterday at Channel 9. And I did go up to Andy and ask him, did you really bring in five pizzas when you were interviewing for a job with Jack Heath at Channel 9? And he goes, how did you know that? Well, Jack talked about it on the radio this morning. But see, that story, when we were talking about on Thursday, was really interesting to me because in this day and age, what I hear from people is I've emailed so many resumes, they won't even respond. I can't even up the phone and talk to anybody. They won't even talk to me. How do I make myself stand out? So that's a question that I have for you. So if you're consulting with someone, mm-hmm. that they're going to face that.
That's right.
How do you suggest they stand out?
You've got to, again, I emphasize my role as a facilitator. So by asking these questions, like we asked earlier about what did you see, hear, and experience about money, how did you grow up, any brothers, sisters, what your parents do, so I listen to all of these things. And I start to shape in my own mind a picture of their natural strengths and who they really are, but may not have given themselves permission to be or have listened to someone else tell them that they aren't. And then I just slowly ask questions and pull this out. And then, as I was touching on earlier, everyone is unique. Everyone has strengths. And so I find out what that is and then encourage them to use it in a way that makes them stand out.
Right. But some people hear the negative and they do the opposite. Right? So I remember, you know, Sister Anne Cecile or whoever it was back on the west side at St. John the Baptist, right, while we were singing songs, tell me whatever you do, don't go into music.
But I love
to sing songs, and I love music.
That's something different, and I love how you say that, because early on, these people who impressed us or didn't, I've talked to so many young individuals who come out of the public education system today who have been told they are incapable of succeeding at anything. I have a brilliant 20. He just turned 20. His birthday was October 31st. He makes music scores for televisions and film,
right?
And has cerebral palsy. He's brilliant.
Sure.
He just applied to one of the leading distributions for this kind of, and he was accepted. His friend wasn't.
Right.
He was told by his music teachers in high school he would never succeed in the music industry.
Isn't that interesting,
yes.
right? Yeah.
I was told I would never graduate from high school. I've got a PhD.
Yeah.
All with high honors.
Yeah.
But that's some eighth grade teacher's opinion enough to write it down.
Right.
And these are just a couple of many stories.
I took a communication course in college, right? And you had to write a paper and do a talk. And at the end of the talk, she goes, "You're not funny. Don't go into communications," right?
Yes.
And it's like, okay.
Teachers should not have personal opinions. They should be left at the door.
I do have a quirky sense of humor, right, Jeremy? I do have that. That's for sure.
Indeed you do, sir. Indeed
yes.
you do.
Yeah. But anyways, hey, we got to have fun. 645-6161. Again, phone lines are still open. Dr. Deborah Osgood is my guest this morning on Mark Hebert's Money Sense. Love to hear from you. We're talking about change. We're talking about how to go through some self-assessment to find out, you know, what are the things you fear and how to get over that. What are you fit for when it comes to a job?
What did your teachers tell you?
What did your teachers tell you? Right?
You were or weren't.
Right? Yeah. And so more times than not, my recollection was I the best thing I ever did was not listen to a lot of people.
Mm-hmm. That's
you
right.
Think about it. Kind of ignored them, you know?
You've got to find your voice, and you're lucky. And again, most men are encouraged to be themselves more than women. But,
right.
you know, finding your voice, finding a mentor that encourages you to speak your voice is not usually the case.
Well, our industry is very interesting because we need more women in our industry.
Hmm.
We don't have enough women in our industry. And I don't know why women aren't looking to becoming financial planners and wealth managers.
My sister-in-law is just finishing all of her certifications in this.
Good for her.
Moving out of software industry into this field.
Yeah.
She's always loved math and has been very good at it.
Yeah.
So she loves this.
Yeah, and there are
but
different.
But you're right. They're different, mostly.
Yeah, you know, and we need more women because they bring the other side of the equation.
Well,
to
in
the
neuroscience, women's the area of the brain for women in empathy is larger than men,
right.
And that comes in very valuable when you're helping individuals to plan for their financial security.
Yeah. Well, I don't care about her.
But
no
a woman
empathy here.
A woman can see this and connect with clients a lot quicker in this way.
Right.
Put well, themselves in their shoes.
Right. Absolutely. Right. So this is a good thing, and it's just fascinating to me. You know, and again, you talk about, you know, the psychology of money. I don't know why women maybe shy away more from dealing with money. I've seen that a lot. In my career, and maybe that's generational.
Yes, I think a lot of it is how we've been socialized.
Right.
I remember one client always believed that men had the money because when she grew up as a child, when she the ice cream man would come around and she'd go ask her mother for a quarter, she'd say, "Go see your father." So she always believed that the men were the ones who always had the money.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's very powerful what we learn early on about these things.
Right.
And you have to go back and this exercise that we introduce,
right.
you need to write it down. We're very strong about making things tangible.
Mm-hmm.
And when you write it down, you have you've increased your level of awareness of what you think about these things so that it puts you more in the driver's seat
right.
than having it be a subconscious influencer of your decisions.
Yeah, sometimes I've run across women who were taught to rely on men for their support.
Yes. And then you touched upon briefly marriages. So then when you get married, if you don't have this conversation about what they truly think about money, then the man is the one who becomes the financier of this new handbag and these new shoes and this new whatever. But it was on sale, and the next thing you know, the credit cards are all maxed out. But she believes that's fine because that's what she learned,
right.
is that men have endless money.
Yeah, that's right. Or I'm going to marry a doctor. I'm going to marry, you know, somebody that can
yeah.
take care of me, you know. And it's just,
take care of me, right.
And I've always, you know, when I've run across that, you know, I've always tried to coach them to be self-sufficient. And the problem happens when somebody dies. So someone's been in that type of relationship and then the husband dies, right?
And
or
they
the
don't
wife
plan
dies.
For it?
I've seen it both ways, but
yeah.
more the men, right? You know. And they don't plan for it, and that's
yeah, that's tragic.
Talk about fear.
Yes.
Talk about an inability to make a decision.
Anxiety.
Talk about an inability to move, right? And the most difficult thing at that point in time, of course, the first thing I've always told people, we're off on all kinds of different subjects here, but when they've lost a spouse is, especially if someone comes to me, is referred to me, who has lost a spouse, and I never had met the spouse, is you don't have to do anything until you're ready to do it.
Mm, nice.
Please keep that in mind. There is something you need to do, though. You need to keep listening to us in the second hour of the program this morning, and you need to take the opportunity at hand and give us a call at 645-6161, because I'm sure people out there, now that you've listened to us for a while, have some stories they'd like to share. Maybe you've got some questions that you'd like to go over about yourself or about the process of making this change. Maybe you've been laid off. Maybe you've always thought about starting your own business. Let's give us some specifics, and let's see if we can come up with some suggestions and potential solutions for you. We'll pick up with you after news at the top of the hour. You can give us a call at 645-6161. You are listening to Mark Ebert's Money Sense. The places you can hear us is AM 610 in Manchester, 96.7 FM on the Seacoast, iHeartRadio, and of course, WGIRAM.com. I know that I'm having fun. I hope you are. Telephone number 645-6161 this morning on Mark Ebert's Money Sense. We'd love to hear from you. Great guest this morning, Dr. Deborah Osgood. She's with the Knowledge Institute. Very interesting topic. In the second hour, we're going to talk about some work that Dr. Osgood has done with at-risk kids. And I've heard about this. We've talked about it a little bit with her. It can relate to you as an adult. You're going to want to hear this. You're going to want to participate in this. 645-6161. Also, we'll spend some time in the second hour talking about the psychology of money. interesting topic as well. Mark Ebert's Money Sense will be back in just a few moments. Phone lines are open, 645-6161, right here on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM. All right, it's time to pick up your eye thing and give us a call, 645-6161 on Mark Ebert's Money Sense. Talk to Dr. Deborah Osgood. She's with the Knowledge Institute. Maybe you're going through some change of employment. Maybe you're thinking about starting. You always wanted to start your own company. You got an idea, right? Let's talk about how you might be able to test the waters and do that. 645-6161 this morning. Give us a call. Now, Deb, I know you've worked with at-risk kids in high school. Let's talk about that. That's fascinating to me.
Yeah, I actually fell into this. You know, I was legally blind and had glasses since the fourth grade and had LASIK surgery 3 times in each eye.
Wow.
So I'm thinking, this is a miracle. How am I going to give back? So I was at the gym and I saw a sign for Big Brother, Big Sisters. And so I became a big sister.
Really?
Yes. Yeah. It was wonderful. Stayed in touch with my little, they call them littles.
Okay.
For years. And that was so...
They turn into bigs, right?
They do.
They're little bigs. Yeah.
Yes. I was the big, she was the little.
Yeah.
She then went on and grew up, and then I got another little.
Yeah.
I ended up serving on the board of Big Brother, Big Sisters.
Wow.
Then I learned about another program called Jobs for America's Graduates, another great program here in the state. It's also a national program, and it helps risk youth to graduate from high school. And it does this in a fascinating way. They perform their own, they organize their own kind of membership association as these youth in the high school or in out-of-school programs, because some of these kids have already dropped out. But they have a president, a vice president, a secretary that documents things. So they each play a role. And for many of these kids who are at risk of dropping out of high school for no cause of their own, but where they're born and environmental situations, finally belong in a way that they have value. And so it's very profound. And so in all of that work, long story short, I ended up volunteering at the Youth Detention Center, which is now the Sununu Center, and I was interviewing the youth there. And I was very disenfranchised by the program because unlike the Jobs for America's Graduates, who help these kids find a way and belong and learn and become members of society, this particular infrastructure is kind of the opposite. And in interviewing one of the young women there, I asked her what she was going to do when she got out. And she said the same thing she did when she got in. And it just impressed me as she did not know that she even had an option to be something else. She only knew this world. No one was helping her to see there was even another world out there.
Right.
And that was unacceptable to me.
Yeah.
So that was, you know, I think I said this on the last show. Joseph Campbell says, follow your bliss. I say, follow what irritates you.
Yeah.
I say it a lot stronger if we weren't on the air.
Yeah.
So this really did not resonate with me well. So I, in helping entrepreneurs for now years, I would put them through 4 steps. I would help them to first find out what they're good at. Next, what do they value in a way that it becomes a business? Third, let's do the business plan. And fourth, let's implement it and get you in a support network. And if you're in that support network, the success would go from failing in the first 2 to 5 years to an over 87% success rate.
Yeah, see, that's an amazing statistic.
Yes.
To me.
There's strength in numbers.
Yeah.
You know, as humans, we like to belong. So there's a logical element to it.
Right.
So with youth, I said, how can I leverage these same 4 techniques and help youth who are at risk of dropping out of school and life, and who could blame them? All they knew was the world was a certain way and it wasn't pretty. How could I use these same tools to help them find out what they're good at in a way that would inspire them to want to graduate from high school and develop whatever other skills they needed so that they could go on to fulfill whatever their purpose was? And so that's what I did by doing a PhD program when I turned 50. I figured, you know,
can't go by looks. 645-6161.
So I signed up for Franklin Pierce, had a great doctoral program, and I did it 100% to validate this.
Huh.
And they required you, it's a Doctor of Arts in Transformational Leadership. So unlike a PhD where you pile it high and deep in a particular area of discipline.
Piled high and deeper. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, I know business. I've got an MBA, an undergraduate in marketing. But this is in transformative leadership, so you had to learn all the aspects of society, history, social, the social infrastructure, the economics, and then you had to take what your interest was and develop something in a way that it would bring about transformative change. So, I mean, this was just perfect for what I wanted to do.
So how'd you get these kids to see that they could be something?
This four-step process.
Yeah.
So I started to, I'd been testing it out in my volunteer work with these at-risk youth programs now for over a decade. So now I'm formalizing it so I can get the scholarly stamp of approval here.
Okay.
So I had to develop the materials that made this a process where other people could implement it in either one-on-one mentoring, the traditional classroom, or out-of-school programs for at-risk youth. And so I gave them the materials, the teachers or mentors had instructed guides, and then students had a workbook. So the first step was this kind of self-assessment. What are my strengths? And so all these high school kids, in and out of jail, some with drug problems, went through this self-assessment. And it guarantees to help any individual who goes through this process figure out what their strengths are.
So how did you get them to feel safe and trust you in communicating? Because I would suspect a lot of those kids just don't trust people.
Oh, 100%. They're my toughest audience, and I've given presentations to all kinds of people, and this audience, high school students, are the toughest.
Yeah.
In this particular study, it was done without me, because to prove a process in a scholarly way, I couldn't be influencing as a person the outcome.
Okay.
So those were teachers and others that did this to get the outcome. But myself, when you need to get trust from an individual, as adults, we tend to listen more and we're more relaxed. But high school students, they have every reason not to judge the system of which we're a part of. Where we're not genuine, as I mentioned before, teachers will tell you what you aren't more than what you are.
Yeah.
And so in order to earn their respect, you have to be genuine. You have to just be 100% congruent and yourself. Hmm. And that doesn't always come easy for adults.
Right.
You know,
right.
You're up in front of the room, you've got to prove something, and depending on how grounded you are, when you look at a sea of faces of high school youth, and some are sleeping on their backpack, and some are pulling out their phone, and you take that personal, you might lose what you're talking about.
Hmm.
But by being centered and by genuinely caring, and I do, about what I do, it comes through pretty quickly.
Right.
And then engage. Engage in a way where they can respect that what I'm talking about has relevance for them.
Right.
And I'm not talking at them. That's another thing that they're very used to.
Hmm.
Most of the public education system is directive, not facilitative.
Right.
You know, my job is to find out who they are, listen, and then help them to be more of who they are.
Right.
Most instructors are, this is who you are, and this is what you'll do, and I'll let you know if you get a failing or a passing grade.
Yeah, yeah, there's a big difference there.
Yeah, huge.
Yeah. Speaking of people on their iPhone, we have a rule for meetings in our office that is the only I that can be in the room is you.
Yes, very good.
645-6161 is our telephone number. Talking with Dr. Deborah Osgood this morning. Fascinating subject. You've heard it. You might have some questions. You might have some comments. Pick up the phone. We got about 35 minutes of programming to go. Now would be a good time to call us. You can go on air, talk to us directly, or give your information to Jeremy, and he'll relay it to us. We are live interactive programming. We are a live interactive program, I should say. I'm Mark Hebert's Money Sense, 645-6161. Jeremy, you're yawning. Are we boring you?
No, I'm just saying.
Didn't get much sleep last night?
No, I'm in the process of moving to my new house.
Not enough calls?
And, not enough calls, that's fine, but people will call in. No, I'm just in the process of moving to my new house. And,
good for you.
You know,
yeah, one of the
family.
Three most stressful things.
And what are the other two?
I think someone close to you dies, and I think changing a job.
There you go. All right. And that's what we're talking about, one of those, changing a job, help you doing that. 645-6161. Get online. Someone's calling in. We'll pick up with that person when we come back from these commercial messages right here on Mark Hebert's Money Sense on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM. And we are back with Dr. Deborah Osgood from the Knowledge Institute. Fascinating topic this morning. Our telephone number, if you'd like to participate, is 645-6161. Looks like someone is on the line, wants to join us. Jeremy, who do we have?
We have Lee on line one.
All right, Lee, how you doing today?
Hey, how's it going, man?
It's going good. How are you doing?
Well, long time no talk, right? So
yes.
Anyway, I'm calling because you're talking about starting your own businesses and entrepreneurship, which is great. And so there are some concerns that I did when I was in a landscaping company that I started up.
Okay.
And me in a partnership, by the way. But anyways, that's a different story.
Oops.
So anyway, What happens is that one of the issues I came across that I think other people should be wary of is when you start up a company, make sure that your overhead cost is not too high based upon getting a loan and buying too much equipment.
Yeah.
Excellent point.
Yeah. So, I mean, because that causes a long-term hardship on you while you're trying to gain profitability.
Yeah, you don't need the new backhoe. You need the used backhoe. You don't need the new dump truck. You need the used dump truck.
That's
right. That's what you're talking about, right?
No, it's not even just that. I'm talking about, I mean, if you're starting right off from, like, just working a 40-hour job and then trying to do it as part-time and then go into a full-time position later on, You're going to be you're going to be doing that 40-hour job, you know, like nonstop until you get most of those loans lowered because it'll hold you back.
That's right, and we usually recognize.
Were you able to make the transition?
After 2 years, when the gas this is when the gas first hit $4 a gallon.
Oh.
Way back when, and I even tried switching off with clientele with other landscapers that live closer by to mine and theirs to me. And between that and the corporate accounts wasn't enough to support the bills and to support me. So I was like, it became too much.
So what are you doing now?
Oh, I build radar systems for the military.
There you go.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I'm glad you called
that. But I never felt any better in any job I've ever done when I was my own boss. So I'm just saying there's a lot of joy in running your own company. So.
Would you like to go back there?
No, I'm getting older. I have a child and stuff now. But if I was successful then, I probably would have been in a good spot now, you know?
Mm-hmm. But I think you hit the nail on the head, you know, not taking on that overhead. Usually when we work with someone, we say crawl before you walk, walk before you run, and run before you soar. And we typically, that means not taking on a high level of overhead until you establish the clientele and the revenue stream that can support it.
Right. And you got to take into consideration just not the repairs, the lodging, and everything else, but the unknown circumstances. So I suggest a person to consider the finance cost of 33% at least of unknown losses that you don't expect.
Right. Have a contingency reserve at 33%. Yep.
Yep.
Good advice.
All right.
Hey, Lee, thanks for your call this morning.
Later.
All right. Good luck with that child. Now, is that an excuse? I have a child.
No. Not at all.
Yeah.
You know, that introduces a huge level of variables in someone's life.
Right.
And so the predictability of the 9-to-5 can sometimes take care of that.
Yeah.
Yeah, particularly where he's tried it and he got stung. In fact, the way I'd describe that is he tried it and he learned a valuable lesson.
Right.
And I suspect that someday he may actually go back into this field.
Right. Right. Because it sounds like he was passionate for working for himself.
Yes. It might not be landscaping, but in the industry he's in, there could be every opportunity for him to become an independent contractor in a way where he can have it all.
Yeah. One of the things that I've seen in practicing financial planning is that, so as we go through life, we start making commitments to certain things, like a spouse, like a child, like a big mortgage, like a standard of living,
yes.
Right? And then oftentimes I've run across people who are in a job that they really hate. They ended up there because that's why I thought I went to college to learn how to do, or that's what my parents told me I should be doing, or whatever it was, and they really don't like it. But they can't back down financially to make the transition because most transitions, I would say, at least in the past, you needed to take a couple steps back.
Right, that quality of life, that's an excellent point.
Right.
And today I invite them, and I've had a client, well, several clients, in exactly the position you describe. They hate their job, and yet they have bills, they have debt. And so I challenge them to really assess what they define as quality of life. And 9 out of 10 times, it comes out to, I really don't want to continue to pay this price, to be miserable, so that I can have this kind of debt and this McMansion and four-car garage. The trend, in fact, one of the trends for the younger generation are these mini houses. You know, that kind of living in what we defined was success. Particularly, I always thought it was crazy to have these McMansions with 12-foot ceilings in New England, given our winters. But these smaller houses, a lot of the younger generation want both. They don't want this kind of debt. They've seen what it's done for their family.
To the parents, right?
Yeah, and so a lot of older people in the situation you describe now have enough evidence and enough very frequent memory to really understand that they may not want to continue to live that way and will then start making choices to balance out both.
But a lot of times you can change that. So I have had experiences with some people where they did change. So they sold the big house and moved into a much smaller house that was paid off, right? Because there was equity in the big house. They took on a second job so they could pay down the other debt and build a year or two emergency reserve.
Right.
Then they quit their job and they started doing what they really wanted to do. Most of them were successful.
Yes.
Because they really wanted it. And I can't tell you how much happier they are now than they were then.
And earlier in the show, we touched upon a little bit of what we've been taught. And so what we've been taught as a society about money is there's a lot of success in how much stuff you have. And that's being challenged now, thank goodness.
Right.
But about 8 to 10 years ago, it was at an all-time high where credit cards were being sent to everybody in the mail, students without jobs.
Sure.
And spend, max out your debt. Rates were, if you missed a payment, your interest rate was 20%, 25%. But Americans have always been encouraged to consume.
Right.
And the more consuming you do, that then we've been told define success. And I think that finally that's being challenged in a way that's a lot more healthy. You don't need all that debt to have quality of life.
Right, right. Oh, I agree.
But when you have the whole system cramming it down your throat in every advertisement, everything you hear, everything you see, it's hard to step back and raise your awareness that it might not be for you.
But when more than potentially a third of your life is spent working, why can't you set it up so that I really want to go to work?
Yeah, do something you love.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, and that's why I love my job.
Because I don't get up in the morning and saying, oh, I don't want to go to work.
Right.
I get up and say, all right, who do we have today?
Yes.
Which victims do I have today, right? No.
Victims.
I love my clients, right? In a lot of ways, they're all the same, and a lot of ways, they're all different.
Everyone's unique.
Right?
Yes.
And it's so much fun to be able to figure out how to get someone to sometimes change their behavior and help them get to where they want to be. Help them really want to have a particular goal and objective, understand what it takes to get there, put a plan, a map together in order to do it, and then help encourage them to continue to focus and do it.
You just said, and your work is very similar to mine, they have to want it, there has to be a fit, so you give them this plan, the whole focus is the plan, the process by which they do it.
Right.
Same exact equation.
Right. But a lot of times, and we can talk about this when we come back from break, why businesses fail. I want to talk about that, right? The number 1, 2, 3 reasons that businesses fail. Dr. Deborah Osgood's my guest. You can call in just like Lee did. He gave us a good example of trying to run a business that didn't work out. Interesting stuff for sure. You probably have the same type of thing that you can talk about, or you have a question. 645-6161 on Mark Hebert's Money Sense this morning on News Radio 610 and 96.7 FM. All right, I like the music. 645-6161. Mark Ebert's Money Sense. Less than 25 minutes of programming for today. Dr. Deborah Osgood is here. She's with the Knowledge Institute. We're talking about, money. We're talking about starting a business. We're talking about obstacles and getting over those obstacles. And I want to know the biggest reasons why businesses fail from your perspective, Dr. Deb.
We usually have three reasons. The fit, want and fit kind of right at the beginning. Why do you want to do this, and why do you think you want to do this? Then no customers, no business.
Duh.
Yeah, but really,
that hit me.
I've seen a lot of people that will work on their website or their logo or their database or whatever,
right,
not realizing that every day they have to get up and the first five things they should do is about getting a customer.
Right.
And then the last one is the easiest, is there's help out there to help anyone succeed in business. There are 30,000 programs across the country our tax dollars pay for that are free business counselors, advisors for finding funding for your business, people who will help you with marketing, and yet we don't know they're there because it's a whole industry called economic development. So here you and I are. We want to start a business. Are we going to put a keyword search in Google? I need economic development help. No. You don't want to put in funding. You want to put in marketing. And yet the small business development centers, the micro mentor, the CDBG, CDFA, EIEIO, there are all these acronyms out there.
Huh.
And you don't know how to navigate
them. Is
that
for farmers?
Well, now that's a good question.
Rural
farmers? Development Corporation,
yep,
actually has funding programs to help people start businesses. Now,
right,
who would know that?
Right.
You don't. But if we aggregate this on there's a nonprofit website that's a directory. If you put in your state, you put in free help, and then you can navigate by these terms. I need marketing. I need funding. I need someone to counsel me at every aspect of my business. I want to do government contracting. That can be a pretty good way to grow a business. But you don't know that they're called the Procurement Technical Assistance Center.
Yeah.
How does that translate into government contracting?
Right, right, right.
So you can navigate all of these online on this website, yeah, buzzgate.org.
So lots of resources.
That'll help them. Yes.
But sometimes people don't know what they don't know.
That's
and they don't know what they really need.
And won't ask because they don't want to look like they don't know.
Yeah. Interesting. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But let's come back to your first question. Why do people fail? Often they don't ask for help.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
It's there.
Right.
And you don't have to pay for this. Our tax dollars. Everything
wow
I'm talking about
wow
is free.
645-6161 if you'd like to call in. Let's change the subject a little bit. Let's talk about the psychology of money, one of my favorite subjects. I end up dealing with this all the time with people. I probably should have had a dual major of music and psychology. I didn't. I just have a lot of experience.
I was going to say, it probably comes natural to you.
And try to help a lot of people in the best ways I can. But when I deal with clients, husband and wife, most times, they're different.
Yes.
They have different goals. They have different thoughts. A lot of times they're diabolical. That's not the right word, but they're on opposite ends of the spectrum.
Why do most different husband and wives fight? Money. It's one of the more common reasons.
Money, sex, and communications were the three reasons people got divorced. That's the one I heard. But
I didn't know.
Yeah, that was years ago.
Okay.
I don't know if it was the lack thereof of the second one.
I was going to say, children will stress you.
Children will stress you. Speaking of which, 645-6161. Why did you get divorced? 645-6161. But the psychology of money is really a fascinating subject, but if you can't get around certain issues that you have with a spouse when it comes to money, you're never going to accomplish the goals.
That's right. You have to understand what value each of you put on money. And it can be all over the charts. We touched upon a couple of the more common things. Money is security. Or rich people are greedy.
Yeah.
A lot of people have heard that. Money right doesn't grow on trees.
Yeah.
You'll never have enough.
Right.
I only need enough money to get by. Otherwise, it's at the root of all evil.
Right.
That's a good one. But as long as we live in a world where currency is what helps to sustain quality of life, it's best to challenge what each of us, particularly as husband and wife, find out before you get married. That should be one of the questions. What value you each assign to money so that you can understand.
Are there resources out there for someone about to get married so they can go through, read a book, take a test, talk about money?
I don't know.
I've never run across anything. That, you know what I mean? Because
I
tell people, if you're going to get married, you ought to really talk about money and how you're going to deal with it and what your goals are going to be. But I haven't really found something that I can point to and go, yeah, this is a really good resource for you. 645-6161. There's a good resource in-house here. Dr. Deborah Osgood, if you want to talk about the psychology of money or starting a business. We have someone on the line, don't we?
We sure do. It's an anonymous caller.
Anonymous, good morning.
Good morning, Mark.
How are you?
I'm fine. Do you know you sound so distant? Do we?
Distant? Distance? As it over the air distance, or I'm just not myself today?
Mark?
Yes?
Okay. I listen to you every Thursday and every Saturday.
God love you.
It's a program I enjoy listening to. And many times you've had other speakers on. But I must tell you, I'm 91 years old. I never enjoyed anyone as much as I do Deborah Osgood.
Oh, excellent.
Oh, she is just out of this world. I've been taking notes completely all morning.
Good for you.
And I really, really enjoy her immensely. And I must say I look forward to your program every Thursday and Saturday.
Well, thank you, dear. That's
thank
wonderful.
You.
Yeah. And would you like to be president of Deborah's fan club? There
oh,
is an
I
opening.
Love that. At my age, I'm here today, Mark. I'm gone tomorrow.
Oh, who knows, right? You never know. 91 years young, right?
But I just want to say I simply adore her this morning.
All right. Thank you, dear. You're a sweetheart.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for your call. What a great call. 645-6161 to become a member of Deb Osgood's fan club. Deb's face is red. If this were TV, you would. It's good. I love my callers and my listeners. 645-6161. If you'd like to participate, less than 15 minutes of programming to go. You can get online as well. Okay, compose yourself, Deb.
I'm speechless. That was very sweet.
That's nice. Yeah. So, yeah, husband and wives, right? And when I talk about goals, right, so I try to get couples to talk about goals. And, you know, one of the perfect examples of this where you see different goals, one of them wants to pay 100% for the children's education. One of them wants to pay it for themselves. Have them pay it themselves.
That's an excellent example, and I have heard of that one many times over.
Right.
Yes. These are the things that I love your point here. You should have these conversations before you get to the point where you need to make the choice.
Before you say, I do.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah, and before you have children, if this is
right.
The question here.
Right.
And I also stress in my work to write them down. I don't know if we touched upon this before, but this is at the heart of all of my work.
Right.
Energy creates matter.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to be a physics major to agree with this. Now, energy never dissipates. It just changes direction. So energy, let's talk about money, and you're in a relationship, and you're going to get married, and there's a lot of energy behind money. We all put value to money.
Mm-hmm.
So energy is intangible. So our feelings, our thoughts, and our ideas are energy. And they will create matter, particularly if they're negative. Today, there's a lot of anxiety in the world. Depression is very common. Mm. Mental health is an issue.
Right.
And what does our society do? We typically give you a pill or you do couch therapy. Well, unfortunately, that intangible energy isn't being proacted on. You're given pill to repress it, and so energy will convert into matter, and it's usually depression, it can be cancer, or something worse. So in all of my work, what we do is focus on proactively doing. So in the question you're raising here, in parents to talk about money before they get married, you've got to write it down. Maybe have this exercise, you don't need a book. Introduce to all of your clients that might be getting married and coming to you before for their financial planning, they should be so lucky to start that early. But have them just ask these three questions and make them write the answers down separately and then discuss them with each other.
Right. We'll write your goals down for you if we do a financial plan for you, because that's what it is, right?
Yeah, but these three questions are the psychology of it.
Okay, go ahead.
Ask the husband and wife to go separately away. What value do you put to money?
Okay.
And then what did you see about money early on? The same ones we've asked earlier in the show.
Yeah.
What did you see about money? What did you hear about money? And what did you experience about money early on? Have them go away, write that down, and then come back and discuss it. Now, after they write that down, the next thing is to ask themselves, what do you know about money now? But don't do that until they do the first exercise. And then the third, they've got to write it down. Energy has to be matter. Writing it down converts their thoughts and their feelings to paper where they can see them and they become more real. The third question then, based on what you know now, what are you going to do differently? You now have taken it out of the subconscious, the intangible. You've now made it tangible. It's out front where both you and the husband can discuss it, or you can help advise them. And the last is the most powerful. You've now moved away from having your subconscious thoughts about money control you, that you learned early on, to proactively seeing exactly what your choices are about handling money now.
So if you go through that exercise and he still wants to pay 100% of the school and she doesn't want to pay any of it, now what do you do?
They need another facilitator if you're the one they hired.
Yeah.
And call Deb Osgood.
That's right. Well, I can tell you what I do. And what we do, we deal with it from a goals perspective and the prioritization of goals, right? So one of the questions that I'll ask is that if you had enough to the one who doesn't want to pay for the school, if we go through this planning process and you do have enough money, you find out you do have enough money to pay for all of your child's college education, will you?
I love this question because my husband and I went through this.
Yeah.
And one of us came from one side and one on the other. And
right.
what we ended up with is, let's agree to pay for it all based on a performance for the student,
yeah.
the child.
Sure.
So as long as the student performed at a certain level and maintained a certain volume of schooling full time,
right.
you know, they weren't taking one course and dropping the other three. As long as they did that and they kept performing, we'd pay for it.
Right.
As soon as they chose that they weren't performing,
but
then we wouldn't pay for it.
But you had the money to do it, right?
Yes.
All right, so that's different, right? Sometimes the resources aren't there. So the classic one is the two big goals that people have in life, financial planning-wise, are educate my children. Well, one of them is buy a house, but educate my children and retire.
Mm-hmm.
The problem with those two goals is one chronologically comes before the other one. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the latter goal might be the priority goal. So we have to determine which one of those goals is priority. So I have clients list out, put in writing their goals, right? And then I ask them to prioritize them. So the question is, if you can't do all of them, which one won't you do? Or will you compromise on some in order to accomplish others?
Mm-hmm.
That's the conversation we have.
That sounds productive.
And then we can back it up by doing a plan that spreadsheets it all out to determine whether they can accomplish everything. And if they can't, then they have to make a decision.
Good, because really, if you can't afford to pay your child's education, to go into debt to do so, and also, what's the motivator? You know, just like we're talking about the psychology of money, what is the motivator behind wanting to pay for your child's education? I mean, I'm one of nine kids when I was raised, and when you learn responsibility and you learn the correlation between your efforts and the outcomes, it's a very powerful lesson to learn early on. If you pay 100% your child's education and they don't value it, what are you doing? What are you really helping your child to learn?
Right. Well, the other one that happens is, and maybe this is an ego thing, oh, my kid's going to Harvard, right?
Now,
so they can say, my kid's going to Harvard.
Now we're getting to the issues. Where's the psychology behind
right,
this issue?
Right. So next week, Rich Nielsen from the New Hampshire Higher Education Assistance Foundation is going to be on. We're going to talk about college planning. He'll be my guest next week. And that is one of the subjects, right, that we talk about. Because schooling is so expensive, you have to really match what you ultimately want to do with the right school. And why would you overpay for that, is what I always say.
That's right.
Right, you don't have to go to an expensive school if you want to be a liberal arts major and be a teacher.
That comes back to our programming. What have we been told to believe, and why do we believe it?
Right.
But challenge reality.
A lot of times it isn't the kids. It's the parents.
Yes.
I would say more times than not, it's the parents. Because they're the ones driving the money.
I used to run with a bunch of women whose kids were in school. The same thing happens in these schools where parents put their kids in the little league or the sports.
Mm-hmm.
And the child really doesn't want to play baseball, but the parents making them, and they're the ones on the sidelines all screaming at each other. It's frightening.
I'm sure it is. 645-6161 is our telephone number. If you'd like to join in with a few more callers before the end of the show here. Well, and that's why I've always found, that dealing with money to be very interesting to me and trying to help people deal with money and make the best decisions they can. Because what I've learned throughout the years is that it's not about the numbers. It's not about the stock market. It's about quality of life and accomplishing things in life that you really want to have down the road. That's more important to
right.
me. You know, sometimes we'll have people come in and they want to know what our rate of return is. That's the first question out of their mouth. And my response is, we don't sell rates of returns here.
Very good. You know, what's also interesting talking about money is I've been saying it is the foundation of our economy as long as currency makes the world go round. But since the global recession, when banks stopped lending, it was a fascinating outcome to create crowdfunding. No one ever saw that coming.
Right.
And now Bitcoin and the whole barter economy is giving rise mm-hmm. here. So who knows what the future will be in terms of what the currency is and who has it and how you earn it. There's just so many disruptors that the way that you and I see the world, and since we've lived in the world, change has been slow. It's faster now. But in the 50s, I mean, you could live and die in one job in one town, and
right.
that would be it. Today, 47% of the jobs that we know exist today will not exist in 10 years.
Really?
That's correct.
47%.
They're all going to be replaced by technology, robotics, artificial intelligence.
I hope mine isn't on the chopping block. Although, interestingly enough, right? I say that.
Yeah, I was going to say.
And we don't think database. It will. We don't think it will.
No, but, you still need judgment as long as
you still need judgment,
yes.
Right. So there is a thing called robo-advisors in our industry now. So these companies that set up these computer models to run portfolios for less money than I would charge.
Yeah, but I'd rather have you personally care about me and help me run my...
That's what we're finding.
Yeah, then some algorithm.
The robos came out, and everyone was all concerned that they were going to take over the industry, and they're losing. Now they're starting. They didn't get much market share to begin with, and now they're losing.
Oh, I don't want to trust a machine with my future.
Yeah. Although what we've learned is that the combination of technology, high tech, high touch works.
Yes. Leverage
technology is a tool, which is what we do, right? So we let the computers do a lot of things for us, but then we don't forget that we need to put the high touch into the equation.
Right.
Right.
The medical industry is one area where they're providing medical care in all of these rural areas through technology.
Right. So we have software that we're changing, we're doing a huge software transition at the Harbor Group, and the new software will allow us to set targets on clients' portfolios. So, for instance, if the emerging market funds go up more than 15%, it'll automatically rebalance it. Or if it goes down more than 15%, sell off the excess gains. Or if it goes down more than 50, you can set the target. It'll automatically buy in. Well, I've been explaining this to clients, and one of the responses I've been getting is that, I don't think I'm comfortable letting a computer run the portfolio. I said, no, the computer is going to suggest the trade. One of our CFP is who knows you is going to approve or disapprove of the trade.
That's a great application of technology.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Yeah.
It's going to monitor on an ongoing basis. You're letting the machine do that versus
Right. But again, the technology put us in a situation where people, like you say, can try a new business while they're still working for the job that they don't like to do.
Yes.
And I really like that concept,
mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah, we think last century, self-employment is, I need to drop everything, focus, write a business plan. I mean, in our approach, you don't even get to the business plan till the fourth step, because it's all about let's see what we're good at and play with it first. And so we think that today, it isn't about entrepreneurship or starting my own business. It's like, I want to create my own job. And that's a whole different paradigm shift of looking at this.
Right. And the other key point that you made on this is that get somebody to pay you to do it.
Yes.
Because if you can't
get a customer.
If you can't get a customer, then what you have is a hobby. And that's my takeaway from you today, because that's really important, that part of it. Right?
Yes. Yes. Mm-hmm. People are afraid to sell also. They think, I'm not a salesperson. And when you work for yourself and you create your own job, it's not really about sales. It's your with this fit piece, and you're so passionate about what you do enough that you want to create your own job around it. Do you think other people might share that same kind of a passion?
Sure.
Therefore, do you think if you go out to get a customer and you tell them what you're doing, that they'll want to hear what you're doing? All of a sudden, you get a sale because you're sharing a mutual interest.
Right.
You're not selling. I say selling is for used cars. Sharing is for creating your own job and having your dream life to go with it.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point. I like that. All right, so you offer a service to folks who are going through this transition. Can we talk about that? I'll give you a minute to do some shameless self-promotion. How's that?
Well, I value when I work with an individual. I actually honor it because it's someone allowing me to facilitate their dreams and help them come true. And I like to do that because it helps me stay real on what's going on. And then another part of our business is we leverage that to develop processes so that other agencies can use it as a process to help more people succeed. So in addition to working for individuals, because Socrates says, unless you do, you don't know, we leverage that real world experience and then we create it to come up with programs. So workforce development agencies, vocational rehabilitation agencies can help more individuals, high schools, to find out what they do well and live the dream and quality of life that they want to.
So someone who might want to consult with you, wants to get a hold of you, how do they do so real quick?
They can go to our website, which is KISBD.com. It stands for Knowledge Institute Small Business Development.com, or 658-0340.
All right. Dr. Deb, thank you so much. I had fun, learned a lot, like I did last time. We'll have to do it again sometime.
Thank you, Mark. It's been fun.
Jeremy, thanks for producing the program, as always.
Not a problem at all.
Now I'm going to thank the most important people out there, and that's you who listen. Thank you for listening. Thank you for your calls this morning. Next week, Mr. Richard Nielsen's going to be in from the New Hampshire Higher Education Assistance Foundation. We're going to talk about college funding, college planning, and all that fun stuff. So you sure are going to want to tune in next Saturday for another edition of Mark Hebert's Money Sense right here on News Radio 610, 96.7 FM, online at WGIRAM.com and iHeartRadio. Have a great one.